Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. Not sure if you know already, but I offer 6-week and 100-day coaching opportunities to work with me one-to-one each week. In these 50-minute sessions, I will be guided by your particular set of challenges and experiences and tailor a style of support that suits your life, your needs, but also covering many of the basics that you expect in sobriety. You will learn about why you drink, why it's hard to stop drinking, what you need to do to succeed, the science around cravings, poor sleep, managing your thoughts, and finally, powerful tools like reframing, taking back your power, implementing boundaries, and building self-confidence. In the 100 Days Coaching, you also get WhatsApp access with me directly for any urgent or general support outside of the sessions. Here's what Sarah says about the 100 Days Coaching with me. What have you gained from coaching with me?
So much. I can't even begin to tell you what an amazing journey this has been. I have gained insight. It's probably been the biggest thing, and how to cope, coping mechanisms, strategies. The biggest thing I've learned has been learning how to reframe, reframing situation, reframing what to do, you know, if those thoughts pop up. I did come to you obviously a little bit destroyed, or more than destroyed, and on the floor, but I knew that I had it in me to do it, and with your help and insights and strategies and what homework you gave me just made it so much easier and normalized it as well. If I had an issue with something, you were there.
It's so nice to hear that feedback, and it's just such a privilege to help people to feel supported on this journey, and to see people flourish after the 100 days is finished is a really, really wonderful feeling. So if you're interested in working with me for 6 weeks or 100 days, please go to the website www.sassysobermum.com/coaching, and you can send an inquiry from there, or just contact me on Instagram or send me an email. Whatever suits you the best. I usually open up my diary once a month to take on a new 100-day client. So let me know and we can see if we can get you booked in. Okay, let's jump into the episode. Hello and welcome to Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today, I'm going to be chatting to Lauren, who's in Leeds, and she's a month from being 2 years sober, which is amazing, Lauren. You must feel so good.
I do indeed. I feel very proud of myself.
Yeah, you should. It is something to feel proud of. I still feel like that 5 years. 5 years in, I'm so proud. Yeah. why don't you tell us a bit about who you are before we jump into your story?
Yeah, thanks. So I'm Lauren, and I am 43. I've got 2 kids. One is 5. One is 8. I'm married, and I live in Leeds, and I run a successful business in Leeds as well. So we hire locations for film shoots.
Oh, sounds very glam. What do you get to meet the, you know, the directors or the film people?
You know, I could if I wanted to. I've worked in TV since I've been like, oh, I don't know, 19. So a long time. And I've worked on set. I've worked on lots of different, met loads of actors, actresses. You know, it's all, you know, but now I work in the office and we've got a team and we kind of organize. So we'll hire a relocation for a shoot. So we've just worked on Fool Me Once, which was on Netflix, for example. You know, so we hired the main character house and a few of the other houses. So it's amazing to see. So we're like an agent for houses, basically. That's what we do. But the best thing about it, I would say, is you get to go in the most beautiful houses. Like, it's such an honor to go in these like amazing houses and for people to let you into their house as well. It's, yeah, that's the best bit, I would say.
It's like an extension of when you go down a nice road and you stare through people's windows and you think, oh, I wish I could go in.
And you know what? I always used to do that, even when I was younger with my mum. We used to, on a weekend, as a thing, as a hobby, go around the village and look in people's houses. I mean, I was just destined for this job, basically.
Yeah, exactly. That's so funny, isn't it? It sounds brilliant. I've never met anyone that does that before, so yeah. It's a first for me. And it must be nice. Do you actually watch the programs then and then go, oh, I chose that house?
yeah so I'll watch, you know, we work with Netflix, Apple TV, Amazon, BBC, so we work on massive dramas, or we'll work on like brand campaigns. So when we see them on Instagram or TV adverts when they come on, yeah, so it's really, yeah, it's brilliant. It's brilliant to work with the clients, and it's brilliant to work with the owners as well.
Yeah. And also Leeds and that part of the country is so stunning. I imagine there is a lot of grand, lovely.
Yeah, and we cover everywhere out of London, basically. So we get to see the most beautiful houses. And like I said, just meet the most amazing and interesting people. And that part of it is just ace, basically.
I love it. So before I talk to you for about the next half an hour about your amazing job, let's get to know your story with alcohol. Where did it all start for you?
I mean, do you know what? I have been drinking since the age of 14. You know, like when I was younger, it was like the done thing to go out at 14. So, you know, I started young. And you know, just kind of drank when I was younger, drank when I was at university, partied hard, you know, like, and I have to be honest, had the best time. And I still look back on it and I think, yeah, I had an amazing time, and met amazing people, had really good fun. Would I have changed it? I possibly wouldn't have changed it, to be honest with you. But the thing for me is that it stopped being fun. And that, I think that's the thing. Like, it, when it stops being fun, I think that then, you know, there maybe is something that you need to have a word with yourself about. Because for me, what it was, you know, I had kids, I had really young children, I was running a really busy company. And though for me, like what my drinking was like is possibly different from quite a lot of other people. Like, I didn't drink ever during the week, never. Me and my husband never had booze in the house, ever. But for me, it was the weekends, and it was just this binge drinking. And also, I just couldn't, I was not one of those people that could say, right, I'm just going for one. Like, I would be the last out till like 5 a.m. And that is fine when you don't have kids and you don't have a business and you're younger, but it's not fine, or wasn't fine for me personally as I got older, because I just became really anxious and didn't really like who I was anymore. Wasn't as productive as I could be, wasn't as happy as I normally was. It was really affecting my sleep massively. And I just thought, what the fuck are you doing, Lauren? Like, you know, like, how much longer can you want to do this to yourself, basically? And that is the stage that I'd got up to. And it took me, I reckon it took me around a year of wanting to do it, not knowing how to do it, not wanting to do it, going back to wanting to do it. Honestly, it took a long time for me actually to make the final move where I said, that is it, done.
Yeah. Yeah. It's what I really like about this story, actually, is you're talking about a pattern of drinking that we haven't had a lot of on this show, but it is a big, what's the word? It is a common pattern of drinking. And I've got clients at the moment, actually, that say, oh, I can't always relate to some of the stories or some of the books or even some of the sober gram, because sometimes the people that share those stories are big drinkers, maybe everyday drinkers. Or for me, for example, I was kind of like 4 days a week. Four days a week, I was being really good. Because sometimes we eat five, and on holidays, every day. But for me, I tried really hard to cap my drinking to kind of Wednesday to Saturday or Thursday to sort of Sunday, like 4 days. But your style of drinking is really interesting, and it will really talk to, I think, a lot of people that maybe don't feel heard because they're very disciplined. And I think that's a lot of what it comes down to. It's like amazing discipline. I don't drink Monday to Friday. It's the same sort of discipline. I've been amongst drinkers before that say rigidly, I don't drink before seven, or I don't drink until this. And they always stick to it regardless. Yeah. You know, even if they're at a wedding, they won't have a drink until their allotted time where it's acceptable. And so I think this is going to be really, really helpful and hopefully healing for those people that are in that zone where they feel like, do I even really have a problem because I don't drink in the week and I just get a bit nuts on the weekend, you know?
I think also for me, the problem was that I wouldn't just stop at drinking, you know, like, so I would drink and I then would smoke and then sometimes take recreational drugs. And the thing about that is that, and the reason why I want to mention that is because I think that it's not talked about enough.
Agree.
And I think people don't mention it through embarrassment. And I think they don't mention it because, you know, you're not meant to do it, basically.
Don't do drugs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the thing is, I wanted to mention it because I think it is much more apparent than anybody talks about. And so that's why I decided to talk about it. And the thing about it is that for me personally, one thing led to another. Now, if I could have, if I stuck to my regime of just drinking on a weekend and I could just have one drink, and that's all it was, or one or two drinks, that would have been fine. But that isn't who I am, and it wasn't my pattern. And so my pattern led to things that I didn't really want to do and led to me going like crazy, basically. Mm-hmm. And that is the pattern I wanted to stop. And that is the thing that made me sad, and it is the thing that made me unhappy. And so, yeah, that's where I'd got to, basically. And I think also, you know, I live in a big city. That kind of behavior is normal, I would say, you know, like a lot of people do it. And so when you're in that environment and lots of people are doing it, you think, this is normal. This is normal behavior. Like my peers, they've all got kids, they've all got big jobs, everyone's, you know, so, you know, it's fine. And maybe it is fine for some people, but for me personally, it wasn't fine. And the reasons I knew it wasn't fine is because of the anxiety, like, and just how terrible I felt about myself, my lost days, I wasn't productive, all those kind of things. And so, you know, it is such a personal journey, I think, as well, like, because it's, some people are okay with that and some people don't get the anxiety, and that's okay, because maybe it'll come to them at different points, or maybe they just won't, maybe it's okay, and that's, you know, high five you. But, you know, for me, that was my situation, and that's why I finally stopped.
Yeah, it's almost like it's such a dichotomy that oscillating between managing to moderate, not having the drinks in the week, and being really good, and probably after 5 days feeling quite good as well. Yeah. Or when you've, I guess, when you've recovered from the previous weekend. But by Wednesday, Thursday, there is that bit of spring in your step. I always found that with my drinking, if I managed to not drink at the front part of the week. But that just also made the thirst for drinking on a Friday or Thursday to Friday for me just really, really big. But that dichotomy of managing to moderate and doing quite well, tick, and then just the wheels falling off sometimes at the, you know, it might not be every weekend, but some weekend. Yeah. That's how I felt. I felt like when I had my drinking under control, in inverted commas, because under control for me, I think the bar kept rising of what the acceptable level was. But when I felt like I was on top of my moderating and I wasn't going too nuts and I wasn't drinking more than a bottle a night, I was managing to drink a glass less than, you know, and all these sorts of things that sort of make you feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
But then every now and then, I don't know, I didn't count how frequent it was, but it was certainly frequent. Once, twice a month, I'd just go mad. I'd take recreational drugs as well. Yeah. I'd do things that really, I felt really let myself down. And then I would feel strangely shocked by it, you know, like, why did I do that when I've been so good? You know, and it's just that constant shifting A, B, back to A, to B, it's exhausting.
Oh my God, I was just about to say that. It is so exhausting.
Yeah.
And I, honestly, that is one thing that I now, I, you know, how life is for me now, you know, I'm tired, but I've got young kids and I've got a job, you know, that bit's tiring, but I don't have that constant worry of what did you say, what did you do? Did you, you know, any of that? That doesn't even come into my mind anymore. Like, so my mind is so much more peaceful and calm and focused on the things that I really get joy from and love doing. Whereas before it was painful, exhausting, it was up and down, you know, those types of things, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And the fear as well.
I had fear.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. I couldn't deal with. Do you know what? And also the other thing is, like, my fear manifested in not sleeping. So like on a Sunday night, so, you know, on a Sunday, if I'd had like a big weekend, I'd say to my husband, I was like, oh God, I know I'm not going to sleep tonight. And I'd already be saying it at the beginning, and it just, I'd go to bed so scared, so anxious that I wasn't going to sleep, because I was thinking, got to go to work tomorrow, I'm not going to sleep. And then I just wouldn't sleep. And so it was like, I was like, oh my God, beating myself up so bad. That, you know, I had had this big weekend, then I didn't sleep that night, so then I was even tireder, and it just, God, it was just so brutal on myself and my body.
Yeah, I know, it is a mystery how I feel like I'm so upright, and I think, you know, relatively quite well, because when I think over the years of the damage that I probably did through smoking, drinking too much, taking recreational drugs, eating badly, big bouts of just huge bouts of not looking after myself, because it's so difficult to prioritize yourself and your self-care, which is, you know, a term we like to kind of band around in the sober community, but it's true. You just don't have the commitment, the desire, the time, the energy to look after yourself when you drink.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me personally, because my drinking was quite different, you know, it's so weekend, and sometimes I didn't even drink ever, you know, for a few weeks and then go wild again. You know, like, I did feel like I had the self-care sorted, but I think this is like, you're tricking yourself, like, and I tricked myself so much because, you know, I spend all this time and I do this and I go for runs and I eat all this healthy food and I go to yoga and I, you know, I do all this and then I just go wild. And then I go back to being good and doing this and that. And, you know, so I tricked myself for so many years. And I think this is why it took me a long time to get to the point where I was like, nah, I'm done with it. I can't trick myself anymore.
Yeah.
And I think this is why, like, this type of drinking, you know, like you were saying, not a lot of people talk about this type of drinking, but I think this type of drinking, it is easier to mask that there's a problem.
Yeah,
I think because there isn't generally, you know, for me personally, like 60% of the time there wasn't a problem. So you can pretend that there isn't a problem for, you know, for a long time because of that. So, but when it starts eating away at other parts of your life and how you're feeling mentally and your time with your children and your work and things like that and your relationships, you know, that I think then, you know, it starts to really become a problem. Oh, it did for me anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. When you had that year leading up to stopping and you were kind of in what I guess I could describe as a bit more of a sober curious phase, thinking of doing it and then thinking, oh no, don't bother, carry on. And then, oh no, hang on, let's go back. You know, what, describe that period, and also it is very difficult to get, I think, to the point mentally where you're just like, that's it, you know. How did that happen for you?
Yeah, So that year running up to it, I knew it wasn't, I knew I didn't feel good about the whole situation. You know, I was having like bouts of like having 8 weeks where I wasn't drinking at all. And then I'd go back to it. Like there might be a night out or an occasion or something. And then I'd go back to it. And then I'd have like another, you know, big time off and then go back to it again. But every time I felt worse after each going out, you know, night. And then, basically I think I'd gone out for one night and I'd just gone wild basically. And I think I got in at like 6 a.m. or something like this. Bearing in mind I had young kids and, you know, and I and a husband and everything. And I just cried and cried and cried that day. I just thought, fucking hell, Lauren, what are you doing? Why, you know, you've got the most beautiful setup ever. Like, you know, everything I'd ever dreamed of, I had, you know, lovely husband, beautiful kids, great job. What the hell are you doing this for? Like, why? And so, and I, do you know what? I think it was either that day or the next day, a friend, a girl, a lady I know who I knew used to drink really heavily, she put a Facebook post on and it said something like, I don't know, maybe she'd been sober a year. And she put it on and I thought, oh my God, if she can do it, like, surely I can do it. So I Facebook messaged her and I said, oh my God, please, how did you do it? Please tell me. And she was like, come round, come and talk to me. So I went round and I just basically poured my heart out to her because I think otherwise it can be a bit embarrassing, I would say, like to people who, you know, because I could just be completely honest and open with her and I just went and gave her everything. And she was like, totally get it.
She's like, I
totally get it. I was exactly the same. She went, don't even worry about that thing. I did this. And you're like, oh God, thank God I don't feel like such a knob. You know, because when there's other people who can empathize with you and who get you and whose stories are similar, you're kind of like, okay, I'm just, you know, it does, you know, my shoulders release and I just didn't feel as bad. And I just thought, right, I'm doing this. And she told me she gave me her tips. And she was like, I know you can do this. She was like, just, you know, contact me whenever you want to. If there's anything you want to say to me, she was like, these are the accounts I follow, which was one of them was you. She was like, you know, these are the people I follow. And she said, that really gives me good inspiration. But if you haven't, look at these, if you need to talk to me, talk to me, you know, all these kind of things. And do this app that counts every day, which I found really beneficial, to be honest with you. And that was it. I did it from then. I never, ever looked back after that. That was it. Nearly 2 years ago. Oh, so it had to hit rock bottom.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's so good. But that was your version of your, you know, rock bottom, or that was your limit.
Yeah.
And my limit was just like yours. I'd gone too crazy on a weekend with girls where I felt like I was doing quite well with my moderation. This is the, you know, tricking myself. And I was in a blackout by 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember going out for dinner and I don't remember, I just have little flashes of the night and I was up till 3-4 a.m.
Yeah.
And I got home and I walked through the door, felt so much shame. It was horrible, that feeling. It's just so tangible. Oh, and I lay on the bed with my husband, who was watching the football, I think, or something, you know, and I was kind of like really envious of him because he felt so normal because he just had a normal night and he doesn't really drink at all anyway, really. But he was just watching the football. It was like a normal Sunday for him. And I felt so bad and grotty and shameful, and I cried about 5 times that day. I was so upset with myself. It was really similar to you, and it was, for me, that was it. I was like, I am never doing this again. I'm just never doing it again.
No. And I think you're right. You have to Well, I mean, I don't know other people's journey, but for me and like similar for you, you know, I think you have to kind of reach that point, don't you? Where like you're just like, nah, I'm done. This is it. I've done enough. I've been to every party. I've seen every, you know, I've talked to whoever I need to talk to, dance with whoever I need to dance with. I'm fine. I've done it and I'm okay with that. And I think the thing for me also is, and it's something I've really had to train myself to do, is that I do not berate myself ever about my past, ever. Because the thing is, like I said to you before, like I did have a really good time. Like a lot of the time I had a really good time and I went to brilliant places and I did brilliant things and I met brilliant people. And so I'm just seeing it in that light. Like it never even crosses my mind about what I used to be like, because I'm just focusing on what I'm like now. And who I am now. And you know, even that thing about you saying, like, you know, what have we done to ourselves? What did we do to ourselves? Like, I'm just like, well, all I can do now is eat healthily, you know, wear my LED mask. I, you know, go for walks. Like, I just can't, all I can do now is live the life that I want to live. That's all I can do. And I can just be pleased and happy that I'm doing that and that we have that freedom. Like, it is just, I feel like the shackles are off. And I feel like I'm now the person that I truly, truly am without any of that.
Yeah, that's such a nice feeling, isn't it? Because I think the person we are as a drinker is very different to who we really are inside. And I think that's what gets people very caught up in the shame cycle initially, because I do think shame does dissipate over time. But people that are in the earlier stages can get very caught up in that shame. But it is about separating, you know, that was me as a drinker. You know, I'm not that person. I wouldn't make the decisions now that I made when I was drinking. I wouldn't, you know, but you do have to kind of relearn that, even in conversation in some social situations when I was newly sober. You know, I felt self-conscious. People were expecting big wild clown version of me, and it wasn't there. It was there, you okay? You make me feel like I have a problem. You okay? I'd be like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just, you know, I'm trying to find my feet with it all. And I sort of almost, in those early conversations when I was sober, I realized, gosh, you really have to listen a lot more than I think I ever did. Because I was really good at, I think, really good at dominating conversation or talking over people when I was a drinker. But I laugh about that a bit now. Like, I'm the same as you. I don't look back on any of that and feel that much shame. I don't feel any shame, really. I've accepted it now, I think.
Yeah. Same. But I think for other people, like what you said before is really important. Like, you know, the shame does dissipate. So I think that's a really important thing to say, because when you're in it and you're feeling it, it's good to know that it will reduce. It will go. Like, you know, like it does over time. You stop thinking about it, or you stop caring about it, you know, or even people who you feel like you need to apologize to, apologize and then just crack on, like just you know, move on if you feel like. But it does go. And I think, you know, like when I was deciding to give up drink, I think the worst part of that was deciding to, like, honestly, like, it wasn't that the hardest bit wasn't actually giving up. Like, after, so once I said, right, that's it, I'm not drinking again, I actually personally did not find it hard after that. Like, I never, it, but the that year before of thinking about giving up and running through my head, okay, well, what will I do when I go to this event? How will I deal with this? Like, there's no way I could go to that wedding and not drink. Like, what, you know, so all of that thought for me was like letting go of booze. So like that for me was the grieving process. Whereas once I decided it, then I just didn't even, I was so focused on just giving up and just carrying on that I just thought, no way, like this is it, done. Mm-hmm. So that bit wasn't hard for me, but the year before was hard, that to-ing and fro-ing. Shall I do it? Shan't I do it? What could I do in this situation? Oh God, there's no way I could deal with this situation without this. Or, you know, so they're like, that's my personal journey. Like, I just wonder whether other people, you know, for other people that are thinking of giving up, I would say like that the thought of giving up is way harder than actually giving up. Like, that's been my experience. So if you're thinking of giving up at the moment, like, this is so hard, there's no way I could do it. Like, I actually think you know, just making the decision, then doing it is so much easier. So,
yeah, that's really good advice. I was the same. I think I got to that point where I thought, how bad can sobriety be if drinking feels this bad? You know, it's like, how sobriety can't be harder than how I feel in my worst moments after drinking. And unfortunately, I felt like I had a lot of worst moments in the years leading up to stopping after the two heavy nights or two heavy weekends or two heavy events. And, you know, I just felt like parts of stopping drinking would certainly be uncomfortable. I just felt like I just naturally had a good awareness that would be, you know, telling some people would feel weird. And also for me, so I'd done it twice before, you know, I'd given up when I was 30.
Right.
And then 8 months later went back to drinking, and then I'd had another little stint a year or two before I actually stopped for good this time. And so I knew that there would be people going, oh, here we go again. You know, like here we go again. She's got another thing she wants to do. Yeah. You know, that sort of. So I had all of that to deal with. But I think the discomfort was more about, for me, it was just about almost sort of telling people. And it was the same as you. I didn't find any discomfort in the actual process of stopping. I was quite excited, if I'm being honest. About it. For me, I was looking forward to changing my life.
Yeah. And you know what? I didn't actually, this would be one of my tips, but I didn't, when I decided to finally do it, I didn't tell anyone. And because my situation being similar to yours, as in I'd told, you know, those times when I'd given up for 8 weeks or whatever, I'd been like, hey, everybody, turn on my phone, say, you know, I'm giving up, and then I'd be back on it. And like, then that makes the shame even worse. You're like, oh my God. Yeah. And then also, you know, like, you've got people's opinions to deal with on top of your own shit that you got going on. And so, like, finally, I just thought, you know, I'm not telling anyone. All I'm going to do is do my app and just be in it myself. And I think once I'd done a month, I thought, okay. I think I told my husband then. And then, you know, and then after another month, I, like, told my best friends. And you know, and everyone was so supportive. And so, you know, because they'd seen me at my worst, like, they'd seen me with my really bad anxiety. So they never, ever said to me, oh, go on, have another drink, or go, oh, why are you doing this? They never, ever did that. And I think that really helped me. Like, my core group of best friends, there's five of us, and they'd seen me, you know, we've been drinking, all of us, we've been best friends since we were at high school. So we've been through everything together. So they knew I needed to do this, and they knew that I wanted to do it. So they've just been so supportive and kind. And, you know, and I really needed that from them. And also the other thing that they do massively, you know, like, it was one of my best friend's weddings a couple of summers ago, a year and a half ago. And, you know, I left, obviously it's all day a wedding, and I left at 9 p.m. because by that point, you know, like, it's quite tiring when you're not drinking, isn't it? You know, you need the booze to keep going. And by that point, I'd been dancing, you know, talked to everybody, eating all the food I could eat. But honestly, by 9, I was knackered. I'd had enough. And I just went over to Bride, who's one of my best friends, and I was like, oh, I'm really sorry, I'm going to go. And she went, I am so proud of you. You know, that is the thing that she said to me. She was like, I'm so proud of you. And it makes me want to cry, actually, because I think it's been so helpful in my journey to have friends like that, and like, to have a supportive husband and stuff. Like, they just knew that I needed to do this, and they supported you. You know, I'm so proud of you. You go whenever you need to go, you know, like, just, you know. So that has massively helped me, because no one is saying to me, why you're doing it. No one is. And you know, if anyone says it to me that I don't know, then I just don't give a shit. It doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, the only opinions I care about are my, like, friends and my family. You know what I mean? I don't care about strangers' opinions on me. So yeah, that has helped me hugely, the support network. And, you know, obviously they also drink. So, yeah, and we still have an amazing time. We just do different stuff. Like, you know, we'll go for a lunch and go for a walk during the day. Or, you know, sometimes I'll go out with them on a night, but obviously I leave early. You know, because the person I am now, I love going to bed at like 8 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and actually what I've really realized is that I love my own space and I love quietness and I just love being at home. Like, I'm such a homebody. And actually that is the true me. You know, like, I've peeled off all these layers now, and that, you know, that's who I am, and I'm really happy and pleased about that, and I'm really pleased that I know who I truly am now.
Oh, so lovely. It's really, it is, because I think that being able to connect with who you really are and really liking that person,
yeah,
so special. Makes me feel emotional, to be honest, even talking about it. But it's so special because I don't know about you in your life, but I think I spent a long time not loving who I was, appreciating who I was, taking other people's opinions of me personally and making them my narrative, you know. Everybody else kind of in a weird way almost had, they didn't perhaps know that, but they almost had a control over the person that I was, and I didn't know how to be myself. And so I really share that same journey that you're talking about, which is just peeling all the layers away and all the bullshit, like you say, and just sitting down with who you are. And I love so many activities that I never thought I would when I was younger. I always say to my husband, I am going to make an amazing grandma. I cannot wait to be a grandma to, like, tend to my vegetables and my flower bushes and to knit and to crochet and to, you know, I love lots and lots of activities that I love people and being with me, being with my family, but I also really love being on my own, doing my own things and doing creative things. I just find it very deeply satisfying. And I didn't have time to do that stuff, and probably was the same for you, having a big job, having two kids and drinking on most of your weekends. You haven't got time for anybody in that situation, really. You certainly don't have time to...
Yeah. Or if you do, it's not all of you, is it? It's like, it's a quarter of you that you're putting forward. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not, I don't know. You're spreading yourself so thinly, aren't you? That you're not actually giving anybody, or for yourself, you're not actually giving anything 100%. Or, you know, it's just, that's how I felt. I was spread so thin, trying to do different things and then managing all this stuff in my head and, you know, all that kind of thing. And now that that's gone, like, I just feel so much happier and so much more content. And I don't need to do much. I like playing tennis. I like going for walks. I like being with my family. I like seeing my friends. But you know what? And I love running my business, but that's about, I don't really have massive needs. I don't really need to do a lot of things to feel like really happy. And like, one of the things I found with not drinking is how much more I love being with my kids. I think, you know, like, I've always loved my kids and I've always loved being with them, but I love it loads more now. And I think because I'm so much happier, I'm really content and I don't have all that shit going on in my head. I think I can just be with them and really enjoy it. And, you know, obviously I still love being on my own away from them. So, you know, full on. I still love having my own time away from them. But the time that I have with them, I am appreciating way more than I did before. And I just think, like, even if that is the one thing I get from this, even if that is one thing, like, how amazing to be able to, for me anyway, to feel that while they're young. Like, I'm just, I feel really grateful and proud of myself for doing it at this point when they're little and I can spend time with them and I don't look back and say, like, I feel like I wasted that or anything. So I feel really grateful about all of that situation.
Yeah, that's nice. And again, echo the same. For me, I've got two older kids, 8 and 10, and through a lot of their young life, I was still drinking, although, I have stopped for 5 years now. So their very young life, I was still drinking. But because I was a single parent, I felt like I didn't enjoy parenting much. Yeah. And I felt like I would turn around to my friends and say, because they would talk about parenting and I would think, I don't feel the same way as you. And I would, because I'm quite open and I love vulnerability. And even obviously when I was a drinker, I would push that vulnerable side and I would say, do you know what? I really hate it. And I remember saying that and getting a couple of looks from my friends of like, oh, that's quite weird. I think because I felt quite broken as a person, yeah, and then I was just drinking in the evenings because I was lonely. And my kids were young, there's 2 years between them. They're both girls. So when one was one, the other one was three. And when one was two, the other one was four. So it's like they have big needs at those ages. And I think that I felt overwhelmed because I was always on my own with them. I've got no family down here.
Right.
On my own. And I just hated it a lot of the time. And I would share that, hoping that I would get, this is probably a little bit before, or maybe on the cusp of people coming out and saying parenting is mental and people being very brutally honest. It was all a bit kind of gentle parenting back then. And your children are everything. And I was just like, they're important. They are really important. But I don't love it like you seem to love it. And then that was another reason why I felt really bad about myself, because I thought, I don't feel all this, I'm desperate for a break and I want to go away and ride my bike for 2 hours on my own and, sort of thing. But now that I have Sadie, who's three, and I've, obviously been sober a while now, I have those moments when she, I'm trying to put her to bed and she wants to do some stories and she wants one more and then she wants one more again. And I've got so much time
to
give her in that. Whereas with the other two, I was like, no, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm actually skipping 5 pages at a time here so that I can under the illusion of you getting a full book. But actually what I want to do is go and have a glass of rosé. Thank you very much. Sadie, I can be there. And I am so deeply grateful for that. It feels like a gift, which I know some people might sound a bit deep and heavy, but that's what it feels like for me.
Yeah, I totally get that.
I've got the time, I've got the patience. And I also find it very sweet and quite funny. I enjoy it. I enjoy it now. Like, I think maybe my friends did. I just wasn't in that place, I don't know why, but just wasn't in that place before. So it's nice. It's nice to have time and not to be on the clock, like, come on, chop, chop.
Yes, I know. I feel exactly the same. Yeah.
So in that first 100 days of stopping drinking, what did you learn about yourself and about alcohol in that time?
I think, so what I did in the first 100 days is I didn't really go out. So I really, I tried to not be put myself in a situation where I would be tempted to drink or anything like that, really. So I really became a hermit, I would say, for the first 100 days. And I looked at the other thing that I did do, which really helped me, is I got a counsellor. So I went to go see a therapist, basically. And I did that because it wasn't so much about the drinking, though that was a big thing. So when I booked to see this counsellor, and when my first session, I opened the door and I sat down and I literally vomited out this. They're like, I've been drinking this, I've been doing this, I've been doing that, and I just want to stop, you know. And she was like, okay, God, you know, like she was just like, I was just like a whirlwind. And because I just felt like I needed to tell her, and I needed to not feel embarrassed about it, and I needed to start from somewhere. So like what I was saying about that lady who was on Facebook, I did the same thing with her, and I felt really, it really helped. And then when in the first 100 days, I booked to see a therapist who I ended up seeing for about 6 months, who I just found, it was just someone who wasn't anything to do with my drinking, my friends, anything. It was just someone completely, you know, subjective, away from all of that, who I could literally just be my complete self with. And, you know, like I'd go every week and I'd say, like, this week I haven't drunk, and I've, you know, and then we'd explore something else, and it might be stuff about my past or whatever, which was really helpful. And I think that's why I saw her for so long. But for me, it was a real like anchor in the week where I could just talk to her about it. And I think it's so helpful talking to people, isn't it? It's just so helpful. Like I found that anyway. So yeah, in the first 100 days, I took myself away from people. I read, I looked at like your Instagram, I looked at other people's Instagrams. I looked at like read stories about people who had given up and like how they felt. So I knew that how I was going to feel. I saw the therapist. So yeah, I kind of like hunkered down basically and just kind of didn't tell anyone as well. So just kind of cracked on.
Yeah. Yeah. And presumably you must have started in springtime as well. So
yeah, I did. Yeah.
Now, and you're about to turn 2 years, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's quite a nice time, I think, to stop drinking as well.
Yeah. To change things, isn't it? You know, like, yeah. I think, you know, winter's hard, isn't it? And I, you know, we've got Christmas and all those kind of things. And also, it's, you know, it's dark and, you know, you just don't, you feel like you want to hibernate, don't you, at Christmas, and like eat lots and drink lots and all that kind of thing. But I think as soon as the sun starts coming out, the flowers start coming out, all that kind of thing, I think it just brings like an innate want and need to change and to grow and to do different things. And I think, you know, I didn't think that when I was giving up, but now I look back on it and reflect on it, I think that is what did happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So you would have gone spring into your first sober summer, which is another big time, I think, for stopping drinking. It's a bit like Christmas. Summer is a bit like Christmas, but just all of summer. How did you navigate that?
And the thing is, not only that, I had one of my best friend's hen-dos and her wedding. So that was her. That was then, you know, so I had big events coming up, and you know, she got married later on in life. So I thought all our weddings were done, but you know, so it was, so the summer thing that so I went on her hen-do, and, you know, we went for the whole weekend, and there was a big group of girls, and we went to like this, we went drinking during the day, and then this like club thing on a night. So it was pretty full on. And there was a few points during the day where I felt a bit triggered, I'd say, but I didn't, not to the point where I wanted to drink. It just felt a bit uneasy, I would say. But, you know, like they're all my friends, and we were just talking and we were having a nice time and stuff. But again, I think I left at 9 that night, and our hotel was just around the corner. So I just left on my own, let them all know, obviously. And I got back to the room and I had a bath and I laid on the bed and I just thought to myself, I'm so proud. I was so proud of myself, because I just thought, like, look what you're doing. You're like having such a nice time laying on a bed, and like you've had a bath and you've had a nice day with your friends. But like you're now, I was like, oh my God, I can go to sleep. So like I was so proud of myself. I was so happy. And then they all came back in like late, you know, 1 a.m., some 5 a.m., all that kind of thing. And I got up at 6 a.m. and we had a swimming pool in our hotel, and I just went swimming, and I went to the gym. And honestly, the next day, again, like, I just felt so proud. And I didn't feel smug, because I think smug's like, I didn't rub in anyone's faces, because like, I just knew exactly how they felt. But I felt proud, and I kept it to myself. And the thing is, I built on that. Every single time I went to one of those events, I felt prouder of myself. And yeah, so that's how I did it. And then when it was the wedding again, like I mentioned before, you know, I left early, had an amazing day, you know, and again, I got home and I felt so proud of myself. Mm. And I think it's that keeps you going, like, isn't it? It's like, you're like, oh my God, I can bloody do this. Yeah. Like, I don't have to feel shit, and it's up to me. I can make this happen. Yeah. And like, you just cannot believe it, can you? Like, why didn't I realize this sooner? This is so
funny. It is so true. I think, and a bit like how you said earlier as well, it's almost like the anticipation of the thing is the scary part. Actually doing the event and not drinking, and realizing that despite a couple of wobbly, uncomfortable maybe moments where your body and your mind are just trying to recalibrate to like, hang on a minute, you're not drinking this situation, what does this look like? Once you get past that, you actually have fun, you actually enjoy yourself, and then you have all this extra stuff, all these toppings that go on top.
Yeah. Like
going back to your room, or you know, going up to bedroom, or taking your makeup off and putting nice moisturizer on. You know, feeling ready to go to sleep, reading a book, having a good sleep, waking up fresh, being able to utilize the morning or the facilities or whatever. You know, there are so many ticks that follow that you rob yourself of when you're drinking. And it's almost like you just have, that's where for me, the evidence comes into play. You know, that's why I tried to create that visual, that thing that people can connect with, because if you get through the event or you get through the weekend without drinking, it puts a bit in your evidence card. It starts to prove to you that you can do life and not only hang on. I mean, sometimes I know it might feel in the very, very, very early days. For some people, it is a little bit white knuckle, but you know, ultimately, the more you do those things, the more you show yourself that you can do them. And I think that's kind of what you were describing there. And that gives you a real boost. That gives you a real confidence boost.
Yeah. And it's amazing. And how proud you are of yourself. That was the bit that really kind of knocked my socks off, to be honest with you. When I actually realised I could bloody do it, I just thought, wow, this is insane. I can't believe it. And like, you know, I was saying to you before, like, I just feel like freedom, and I feel like the shackles are off. Like, I felt shackled, but I was shackled by myself, basically. But that freedom bit is just insane. And it's like, that's the high you need now, isn't it? Like, you know, that's what you're looking for now. It's just like how you enjoy life, and you can take so much from life and be so proud of yourself. But it is hard as well. You know, it's chicken. Like I said before, it hasn't been an easy journey. It took me a while to come to that conclusion.
Yeah. So talk about that, because that leads quite nicely into what were the hardest bits for you?
Yeah. So I think like the hardest bit, like I said before, was the thought of giving up. Definitely. I think another bit that was quite difficult for me was that the bit I grieved for, I think, the most was like mine and my husband's relationship together as drinking. Like, you know, so we, you know, sometimes on a weekend, we just have a glass of wine together in the garden, or we would have a beer together, or, you know, we'd go for a drink and drink together, or, you know, so that bit I found the hardest bit too, that I was upset about, because the other bits that I wasn't upset about, because they were making me feel so shit and I had such bad anxiety, so I didn't care about getting rid of those ones. But I did care about the thing about my husband and I, and we, you know, we just had to find different ways of having a nice time together, really. But that bit did, I have to say, that did take the longest time. And I think he found it difficult too. I know he found it difficult. Whereas like now, you know, we went away for the weekend, just him and I, last weekend without the children. And, you know, what we would have normally have done in that situation is we would have gone to the pub, had a meal, had a lot to drink, you know, stumbled home, had a good time and everything. But, you know, we would have done that. But like this time, none of us drank. We went for walks. We still went for a meal. You know, it's just like our relationship, that our love for each other hasn't changed. We've just had to change the habits of drinking together.
Yeah.
So I think that, to be honest with you, has been the hardest thing. But it didn't last long, you know. And like he got over it quickly because, you know, he was like, oh, I do miss having a drink with you. And I said, yeah, but the thing is, like, that side of me was fine, but do you miss me coming in at like 5 a.m. and being sad and crying and I'm having anxiety? And he's like, oh no, not at all. And I was like, I couldn't separate those two.
Yeah.
That was, you know, I wish I could have, because I would probably be still drinking if I could just do the one drink.
Yeah.
But I just, like, unfortunately, that's just the way I drank. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I think that's going to be really helpful for people to hear as well, because drinking in your relationship, it is a big thing to navigate, I think. How do you connect if that's how you've always connected?
Yeah.
And I think I was quite fortunate because my husband wasn't a massive drinker. If anything, I think I forced him to drink more. So, you know, we would have a pina colada in the garden after doing a bit of gardening because I wanted it, you know, yeah. sort of thing. Whereas he, ever since I've stopped drinking, I think even in 5 years, he's probably drunk not even five times. I mean, he's just you know, he's just not really that bothered by it at all. But definitely it's a challenge, I think, for couples.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, I was the same as you. Like I was the instigator. So, you know, but you know, I guess he kind of liked that side of me too, because it was fun and that kind of thing. But then it, you know, obviously for me, it stopped being fun. So he had to, you know, we had to navigate saying goodbye to that person and that life and things. And that is tricky, but he isn't a big drinker either. And he, you know, he also wasn't really a naturally a big partier, but like, I just made him do it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just, and you know, oh God, I do feel a little bit bad about that, but anyway.
Yeah. That's all in the past. We don't know
about that. We're okay about that now.
I was exactly the same. And I think that there was a flightiness and a fun with that version of myself.
Yeah.
That was a big part of our early relationship, because I met my husband, I mean, I only met him six or seven years ago. So, you know, I didn't meet him. I don't think we'd be together if I met him in my early 20s. That would have been far too hardcore for him. But yeah, I think that in the beginning, he maybe didn't see so many of my lows. I kept a lot of it to myself, apart from the day that I decided to quit, when I just was quite broken.
Yeah.
So I think it was hard for him to connect initially with, that's it, I'm not drinking again. It was kind of like, well, that's extreme. Do we really need to do that? And it wasn't until, I remember going on a long walk with him along the beach, but it wasn't until I explained how alcohol made me feel that he really understood. And he thought, God, why would you? You don't want to do that to yourself. That's horrible. He didn't have that experience with alcohol. So I think it was hard for him to move into the place where he could really empathize.
Yeah.
But, you know, he did his best and he did a good job of understanding that, unfortunately, more often than not, drinking resulted in a lot of bad stuff.
I think that's really important, actually, what you said, because I think you do keep so much to yourself, don't you, because of the shame and embarrassment, that actually to your partner or whoever is around you, they don't see it as a problem, because you're using it so much.
Yes.
And like I did it, you know, and so I had to really speak to my husband about. He was like, oh, Mick, couldn't you just have like one at the weekend? I was like, Yes. I wish yeah. I could, you know, but I have to tell you, this is how I've been feeling. This is how it makes me feel. This is how, you know, I feel so sad and all these kind of things. And then he was like, right, okay, I totally get it. Yeah. But I think it is important that you do I think at some point on the journey, you have to explain it to your nearest and dearest, because otherwise they don't see it as important as you do, because you've done such a good job of hiding it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really, really good point. And I think that it is an important thing to do, for sure. Because I do think that, you know, people, they know their own experience of life. They have their own framework of life, and that's how they view the world, from their framework, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that for my husband, he had drunk a lot in the early 20s, but had totally grown out of it, had done the thing that I felt like I'd never done, or was just not doing. So he could take it or leave it, and he could have one, and he could very often go out and just drive. He wanted to drive. He was happy driving. He loved that. Whereas, you know, I would never do that. I'd pay for taxis, or I just couldn't go out and drive. That was really a bad night out for me. You know, that's the way that I approached that. Yeah. And so we did come from different worlds when it came to drinking. And you can't assume that they get it. They can't assume. More often than not, they won't get it, and they need you to spell it out. So yeah, it's anyone listening that, you know, will be listening to this, it might resonate with them. Try and have that type of conversation. I think it feels good as well to be true and to be vulnerable and to get it out and to just get out. That's how you really feel.
Yeah.
And that's quite liberating as well.
And I think even if you can't do it face to face, even like writing it down and telling them, like writing in a letter, or just a way of getting it out of your head and explaining to somebody else exactly how you feel. I agree. I think it's like it's like a really good first step, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So what would you say has been the biggest gain? I know it's hard. And we talked about this actually before we came online, about the freedom that not drinking just generally brings to your life. So, you know, what would you say are the biggest gains?
Oh, there's so many. Like you said, so I think the biggest gain has to be, for me personally, is my happiness. That's the biggest gain. Because the thing about my happiness is that that then has a ripple effect onto everything. You know, like now I'm completely content and happy. You know, obviously it's not like I'm just skipping around and that everything's brilliant all the time. Like, because life is hard, isn't it? You know, but I had that, and then I had all that shit with that to do, you know, the alcohol to deal with. Whereas I don't have that anymore. So life is easier and it's happier. Yeah. And so obviously that then allows me to have better relationships with the people that I love. And it allows me to work and do stuff that I love to do. And kind of, yeah, it has an effect on everything. Like I believe in myself more. I am more, you know, I look after myself more. I know who I am more. It's like, you know, the gains are so monumental and there's so many of them. But honestly, it comes from, the biggest thing has been my happiness and my mental health. I'm just not as anxious anymore. So that has to be the biggest gain for me.
Yeah. Big gains there, though, aren't they?
Massive. Huge. You'd pay a lot of money for those gains, wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's all stuff, I think, that you don't see on the road ahead. You don't realise that that's what's coming.
No.
You know what I mean? I think which makes it kind of more magical.
But I do think that this is why, like, your Instagram account and, you know, people like that, people you can talk to, is so important. Because the thing is, if you can, you know, when you're in it, you can't see the wood for the trees. You know, you can't tell how you're going to feel, or the benefits you're going to feel, all those gains. You can't see it. All you can see is like, how the fuck am I going to do this? Like, you know, so speaking to people who have been through it is just so helpful. Because like, you're like, I know this is painful now and you might feel like this, but it'll go, and then you'll feel like this, you know, and then you're like, okay, I can keep going, you know. And that app, oh my God, that app on my phone, like, you know, to be honest, I don't actually look at it anymore because I don't need to, but I did when obviously we were doing this call. But in the first 100 days, in the first 200 days, I looked at it daily, honestly.
Which app is that?
It is... here it is. I Am Sober.
That's the one I use. Yes, brilliant.
And I looked at every day and I was just like, right, I've done 2 days. Oh my God, I've done 3 days. Like, that for me was so important. And honestly, the first that I would recommend, that would be definitely one of my tips, is like get an app. Because just the everyday thing of looking at that, you're like, every day you can feel like a winner. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Or you feel like you're a step closer, don't you? Or like, even, you know, when I had it and I'd say I'd done 40 days, I was like, oh, like, I just do with a drink, or I'd look, you know, it's sunny and I wanted to, all my friends were going out in the pub. I'd look at that app and be like, I've done 40 days. I'm not going to go do that. Yeah. Like, it's like having your own little counsellor in a way, because it just keeps you on track. So, yeah.
I love that. So moving on to tips then. So number one, you would have the counting app. What would your tip two and three be?
So I would talk to somebody who has been through it themselves. And if you cannot, you know, if you know somebody that's done it, you know, like I said, I reached out to someone on Facebook, or, you know, looking at your Instagram account, just looking at people who are, even like for me, like even a few months ahead of me, like a few years ahead, I was like, oh God, that's a bit out of my, you know, I couldn't even think in years. I was like, I've got to look at people who have done a month. I've got to look at people who have done 2 months. So that's why the app helps. But then obviously speaking to somebody who's been through all of it, and like, right, now you're going to feel like this. And you're like, okay, that's what I want. So I'd speak to somebody, I'd get the app. And the other thing is, initially I just would hunker down and I wouldn't put yourself in a situation where, you know, you might be tempted to drink. I'd kind of, especially for the first 100 days, I'd really kind of be kind to yourself and make it easier for you, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I had the same number three tip as that.
Yeah,
in my first episode.
Yeah,
just don't do anything for a bit. You've got plenty of time to go out and socialize and understand if you feel compelled to do that, like you want to challenge yourself and you want to push yourself to dip into that, then that's also fine. Yeah. But I think a lot of people do benefit from not having such triggering situations.
And also I think my final tip would be about not telling anybody.
Yeah,
that's my personal one, to be honest, because some people might feel like telling people is helpful, but I felt like, for me, because I'd done it a few times and then people are like, yeah, right, you're going to do it again. And I was just like, oh God, I don't know, that judgment. Whereas I felt like the app was enough for me to be something that was keeping me going. So personally, like, I wouldn't tell anybody until you're in a position where you're like, okay, well, I've done 40 days, I've done a month, I've done 20 days, you know, whatever it might be, where you feel comfortable with it, to allow people to know what you're doing. But I think, like, keeping it to yourself and like just being really like, this is my thing, this is what I'm going to do. And like, you know, if you don't do it, it doesn't matter, does it? Like, if you've, you know, it's only, you're not having to explain it again and again to somebody else. Like, you just... You know, it's just an extra thing that you possibly don't need.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so true. Yeah, really good advice. Really good. So if you're open to people following you or sharing your journey, or, you know, how can we find you in the world?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't even have an Instagram account. I mean, I have a work Instagram account, and I don't really, you know, like, this is the first time I've ever talked about it, really. So my business Instagram account is UK locations. So, you know, if anybody did want to contact me, you can do it, DM it through there.
It's been lovely to talk to you. I really appreciate you sharing your story with the show. I think everyone's going to love it. I think this episode, people are going to really connect to, there are parts of this episode that we haven't, weirdly, nearly 80 episodes in, there are bits in this episode that have never come up before.
Oh,
so that's really nice as well, you know, because it's just always about that diversity and trying to help somebody feel heard and seen.
Yeah, exactly. And less embarrassed.
And less embarrassed, yeah. So, thank you so much.
I've had a lovely time.
Oh, good. That's what we like to hear. And everybody else, thank you and see you next time.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.